Welcome to Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This series of 15 podcasts is called Managing Professionals: Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. It's designed to help people who have the responsibility for managing a group of professionals. This fifth episode is called Why Should I Follow You? And is based on my book, True Professionalism. In previous episodes, we've discussed the power of one-on-one coaching and how our manager should spend time. Now we turn to a number of episodes on what characteristics you must have to get people to accept your influence. The first challenge in every professional's life is to learn how to be a good professional. However, for many of us, the time also comes when we must learn how to lead other professionals. This may come early, when the individual must learn how to lead a project team, or later, as he or she ascends to the role of a practice group head or an office head, or even one day a managing partner or CEO. Whatever the level, certain key principles of leadership must be observed. Winning the power to lead professionals is no easy task. Before a leader can be accepted, let alone succeed, autonomous professionals must agree to be influenced by that person. Most professionals don't want to be led or managed and are highly resistant to anyone making suggestions about how they practice or commenting on their performance. Consequently, those who wish to lead professionals must meet stringent criteria before they can obtain effective influence. To explore what kind of leadership does work, consider the questions that are rarely spoken out loud but are on every professional's mind when a new leader is appointed or elected. Why should I follow you? Why should I listen to what you have to say? If a leader is to provide an answer to these questions, four tests must be met: motives, values, competence, and style. We'll start with motives. The first test that you, as my potential leader, must pass is that of motives. I'll only accept your influence and direction if you give me evidence that you are primarily committed to the success of the group or the institution rather than to your own self-aggrandizement. Your task as a leader is to help us, the group, win, not to strive for your success. If I don't trust your motives, nothing else will matter. My primary concern is about your integrity. How do you convince me of this? Well, obviously, I'll pay more attention to your actions than I will to your words. Do you have a track record of helping other people? Do you have a history of bringing others into your client relationships and passing on responsibility to them? Before you were even considered as a potential leader, did you make a habit of helping other people succeed by contributing time and ideas to their practice, even if there were no immediate benefits or credit to you? Can you show me examples of when you chose to put the firm's or the group's interests first, even when it involved a personal sacrifice? I won't settle for promises that you'll start to do this if you become the leader. Leopards don't change their spots. I look for someone who's already done it. Leaders are notorious for appealing to the need for team play to make the firm or group succeed. Fine, but what's your track record of being a team player when you were just one of us? It's all very well to be a role model when you've got the job, but how good a role model were you before? In looking for further evidence, not just words, of your motives and attitudes, I might also talk to the junior professionals you have worked with, the ones who worked on your client assignments. What did they think about your leadership, managerial, and supervisory abilities in leading a project? Did you keep everyone informed about what was going on? Did you hold project team meetings? Did you take the time to teach and to coach? Were you both demanding and supportive in giving out significant responsibility and helping people accomplish more? If you don't have a track record of being a good manager or leader on your project work or your client work, why should I think you'll be different if you become the group or the firm leader? Next, let's talk about values. If I'm comfortable with your motives, the very next thing I want to know is, what are your core values? I will accept your influence, your guidance, and your direction if and only if I believe that you and I share similar goals. I want you to have a personal philosophy of practice that I can be inspired by and to share. However, I don't want you to tell me that you will develop such a philosophy once you hold the leadership reins. Your commitment to a recently developed philosophy of doing business will not be credible. I want somebody who already has clear values and acts on them. I want to be led, if I'm prepared to be led at all, only by a person of principle, not someone who is driven by expediency. As before, I will look to your past behavior to judge your commitment to what you say are your principles, your values, your standards. Did you ever incur a personal cost in order to stand by your values? For example, if you were to try to tell me that you're committed to the highest standards of quality and excellence, I'll look at your history. Was there ever a time when you turned away work or refused an invitation to propose on a job on the grounds that you or your group were already too busy and couldn't do a quality job if it added to that extra piece of demand? Many professional firm leaders act as if they believe that it's a mistake to turn away any current cash as long as an adequate job can be done. And maybe they're right. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm merely saying I'm not going to believe that they are committed to high levels of excellence. I want to know whether you've got real values, not whether you know the right words to preach. Don't preach what you haven't practiced. I'm not inspired by hypocrisy. I'll be turned on by someone who both believes and acts on the principle that if we know we can't do a superb job, we shouldn't take the work. To engage my energies, you need to find some way to demonstrate that you care more about long-term success than about cash today. Similarly, I want someone who's more concerned with getting better, not just getting bigger. I may follow a leader, but not someone building a personal empire. If your job as a leader is to influence and motivate me and my colleagues, then you must infect us with your personal enthusiasm. And I don't mean an exclusive enthusiasm for money. If I am to follow you and accept your influence, I expect you to be passionate about our work, be fascinated with our clients and their problems, and care deeply about all of us accomplishing something meaningful. If only making money is your primary goal, you'll be a bad leader. You might be a great financial officer, but you're going to be a bad leader. The very best firm or group leaders inspire us to extraordinary efforts, not by saying, work hard and we'll all get rich, but by providing purpose to our professional lives. Seriously, if you want me to go the extra mile and strive for true excellence and thereby make us all rich, then help me find the excitement, the challenge, the fun, the purpose, the fulfillment in what it is you want me to do. What has a chance of getting my attention is an appeal that says, work hard and we really can be acclaimed as being the best. Not just in our own minds, but by clients and competitors. Really try, and we can make a profound difference to our clients. And if we succeed at all that, the money will follow. Third, let's turn to the topic of competence. Again, if and only if I both trust your motives and subscribe to your values, then I'll turn to the third topic of competence. If I am to listen to you, I expect and require that you will have constructive new ideas on how to get better. It's often said that a leader must have a vision, but this is misleading. Having a vision is easy. We should aim to be the best, the quality leader in our marketplace, acting as a collaborative team, providing a fulfilling, developing, mutually supportive environment. The words are always the same, right? What is hard is creating innovative new approaches to business that will help us achieve those goals. So, in deciding whether or not I accept you as my leader, I want to know about your track record again in coming up with new ways of doing things. Have you ever previously suggested, or better, implemented new ways to improve productivity? New approaches to client service or marketing? New methodologies, templates, or tools? New ways to train and develop people? Where is the evidence of your creativity in running any aspect of the firm's business? I'll ask everyone who's worked with you, if you were stuck and needed creative thinking, is this someone you would turn to for helpful suggestions? I also expect that if you come into my office and try to give me a performance review, as managers and leaders do have a habit of doing, You will have some truly constructive suggestions for me as to how I could improve or be more successful. Telling me I should do better, but not telling me precisely how, is not leadership. It's merely offensive. Be substantively helpful to me and I'll listen to you. Otherwise, stay the heck out of my office. Finally, if all the previous tests have been met, I'll be interested in your style. Good leaders must be effective coaches, helping me and my colleagues to stretch and accomplish fulfilling goals. This involves giving me, or preferably helping me choose, challenging goals to accomplish. To be effective, good coaches must excel at two opposing skills. On the one hand, I will not accept your guidance and critique unless you're supportive, encouraging, nurturing, and helpful. On the other hand, you do need to be continually demanding, nagging me to stretch for my next accomplishment. One of these skills without the other is ineffective. If you're only demanding and nagging, you are Attila the Hun trying to be my boss, and I don't take kindly to bosses. I will not follow you. You can force me into compliance, but you will not engage my energies. On the other hand, if you're only supportive and nurturing, you're a wimp, and nothing will get done. What I need and what I will accept in a leader is a friendly skeptic, a loving critic, a challenging supporter, someone who's not afraid to give both positive and critical feedback and is involved enough to know when either is due. Achieving this balance is actually a rare skill. As Peter Friedes, the former leader of Hewitt Associates, an actuarial compensation and benefits firm, as he pointed out to me, most of us tend to over-rely on one or other of these two skills. For example, some people may have a bias towards being demanding, and if that doesn't work in a given situation, they react by becoming even more demanding. It's the only way they know how to lead, and because they're only playing one side, it usually proves ineffective. And the same, of course, is true for the other side. Other people may have a bias towards the nurturing, encouraging, supportive side. And like the other ones, if the performance doesn't come about when they try it, the only thing they know is the same, so they become even more nurturing, even more supportive. And if that's the only thing they're doing, it will be equally ineffective. What works is learning to play against as well as with your natural style in order to ensure the most effective balance. One other style issue is important, that of consultation. In a large group, it's not possible for everyone to be involved in every decision. In spite of this, everyone wants to feel that their voice is heard and that their views are relevant in decision-making. As a consequence, I want a leader who engages in extensive prior consultation on major issues. I don't expect that my view will always prevail, but I do want my views solicited in a timely fashion, early enough to have the chance to make a difference. Too many professional firm leaders hear that concerns about communication exist within the firm or the group and think this means they should tell me more about what's going on. This is dead wrong. I don't want to be told more. I want to be listened to more. Take the time to solicit my views and be organized enough to be able to identify the forthcoming issues. Saying there wasn't enough time to consult is only evidence of your inefficiency. In summary, I don't want the head of my group to be a cold, calculating business person. I want someone who's not afraid to care about clients, about quality, about all of us, including the administrative staff. Someone who'll take the job of leadership because they want to help make a difference in people's lives, not because they want the position, the title, and the power. I want someone of whom it will be said, this is a better, more exciting, more accomplished place to work since he or she took over. He or she believes in things that I can believe in, and it's proven every day because we do things differently now and accomplish more. Give me someone like that, and I'll agree to be managed. As the old slogan has it, a leader doesn't build a business, a leader builds an organization that builds a business. Accordingly, the single most relevant criteria in selecting firm or group leaders is finding someone who has an interest in building a team, someone who's prepared to get his or her satisfaction through the accomplishment of others. There's an old debate about whether leaders are born or made. The good news is, if there exists a sincere desire to help others, then coaching, leadership, managing, whatever you want to call it, is in fact a learnable skill. The difficult part is not helping people learn the skills, it's finding people with the right attitude. To be accepted as a leader, questions of motives and values come before those of competence and style. And since past actions speak louder than words, you will be judged by the behavior you demonstrated prior to attaining the role. You can't start being a leader on the day you get the job. Professional organizations that have the type of leadership described here do exist, but they're not the norm. What worries me most is that today's professional firm leaders, it doesn't worry me that they're imperfect in fulfilling the role. It worries me that so many of them aren't even aiming at it. I frequently encounter groups and firms where the structure is not logical and are historical accidents. The people in the group leadership roles were not chosen for their interest in being coaches, leaders, or managers, but on some other criteria such as business getting ability or their professional eminence. And the compensation system contains no recognition for leadership or managerial activities. All group leaders are expected to carry as full a client workload as any other professional, and then to manage on top of that. Of course, this is an impossible task. The situation is not inevitable. The standards of leadership described here represent nothing more than a call for professionalism when managing professional. All that's required is to find a small number of individuals within the firm, within the group, who can be credibly received by their colleagues as interested in helping others to grow, develop, fulfill themselves, and flourish. A firm with no such people is in a sad state indeed. This has been Why Should I Follow You?, the fifth episode in my 15-part series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, Behaviors. In future episodes, we're going to delve further into the topic of managerial attitudes. We'll also look at how to inspire people, how to tackle difficult people, and how to build teams. If you would like more information or access to other podcasts in this series, or the previous series, Marketing Professional Services, go to my website, davidmaester.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set from my website, davidmaester.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.